So I went home from that lunch down the street, went to my house, picked up the phone, called him and said, I know it's a long shot, but would you ever be interested in starting a business with me in the shoe category?
For more than half a decade, Sarah Jessica Parker has filled our screens with the shoe-obsessed character Carrie Bradshaw on the show Sex and the City. Since then, Sarah Jessica has taken her love of shoes into real life with the launch of her fashion label, the SJP Collection, in 2014. But stepping into the role of designer and businesswoman was a big career transition. You see, for Sarah Jessica, this meant putting in the hard work to learn everything she could about the fashion business so that she could build something that would really last. I'm Michelle King, and this is She Innovates, a podcast that shares the stories, challenges, and triumphs of women across innovation, technology, and entrepreneurship. Today, I'm thrilled to speak with actress and founder and creative director of the SJP Collection, Sarah Jessica Parker. In this interview, Sarah Jessica shares how she finally said yes to starting her own brand of shoes and handbags, and also the hard lessons she has learned in building a business and changing careers. So Sarah Jessica, I thought maybe we could just get started by getting you to share a little bit about how you got into the fashion business and how that's kind of grown for you over the years.
Well, I guess my first experience in retail, I guess, some might not call it fashion, was I was asked to be partners in collaboration for a brand called Steven Berry's. And this was, God, I don't even remember how many years ago, 10 years ago or more. It was a very interesting business plan. It actually ultimately wasn't a terribly successful business in a whole, because they were basically sort of ahead of their time, but it was a company out of Long Island that was producing sort of sportswear kind of at a very, very low price. And their business model was they sort of approached it in mass. It was sold domestically. And they asked me to come on and produce a line of clothing that would be my own label in the house, sort of, and for extraordinarily low prices. And it was a very interesting experience. It was successful, and then they were, as many people do, they expanded quickly. And a large part of their business were in malls. And this was right before the collapse. And the business model sort of didn't work in ways that were meaningful, and they ultimately folded, which was very disappointing. About, 2 years later, everybody was doing low-priced, sportswear and kind of ready-to-wear.
That must have really given you some sort of practical experience and hands-on experience with retail business. Could you maybe share, even though it was challenging, what lessons you learned from that?
Just learning about production, which I had up to that point not been part of. Learning about tech packages, learning about social compliance, just profits, margins, ledgers. So it was a very good experience, and I was sorry that it ended, not just because I was enjoying it, but also because it was serving such a large community of people who had a chance to get their hands on sort of fashionable items at great prices. So I had that experience, learned a huge amount. And then I was brought into Halston and, worked as sort of head of Halston for a while. Another interesting, flawed experience, but nonetheless very valuable.
You must have gained a lot of insights from those experiences at Stephen Barry's and Halston's. Could you maybe share a little bit of how you got the idea then to go from that to creating your own shoe label?
There have been lots of people roaming around inquiring about me starting a shoe line, and it was very interesting to me, and obviously I had my own personal interest in that category, but ultimately I was having a very hard time saying yes to the idea, much to the dismay of my agents, because it seemed that there was a lot of money to be made in that category. The idea for most partners, or all of those partners, was to make shoes in China, sell them in large quantities at very, very low prices. I had a problem with that, in that particular category is so significant to me. I wanted to produce a shoe that I wanted to wear myself, that would last, that would be well made, that would be made in a factory that I felt was living up to social compliance in this country, that we could keep track of subcontracting and all that funny business that starts happening once you leave this country. And I didn't feel principled about it.
Yeah, you know, that's a really good point about building a business that makes sense to you. Could you share how you then got started with the shoe line?
I was sitting at a lunch meeting with a couple of women that I know who are business leaders, and they were asking me about the shoe category, and I kept saying, you know, it's just not right. I really want to do it, but it's just my partners aren't right. I mean, they're great people and super successful, but... And they said, well, what do you want? And I said, what I'd really like to do is be in business with George Malcolmus III, who I'd known for many years by that point. You know, I was like, but, you know, he's spoken for and he's busy. And they said, have you ever asked him? And I said, no, I don't want to put him in that position. And they said, just call him. And so I went home from that lunch down the street, went to my house, picked up the phone, called him and said, I know it's a long shot, but would you ever be interested in starting a business with me in the shoe category? And he said, be at my office tomorrow morning.
After that phone call with George Malcolmus III, who's actually the president of the luxury shoe company Manolo Blahnik in the US, many, many design meetings and iterations and collaborations followed. And finally in 2014, the SJP collection was born. Each pair of shoes in the collection is actually handcrafted by a third generation Tuscan shoemaker in Italy. These shoes in many ways represent the significant memories and moments in Sarah Jessica's life. Now the company is entering its fourth year, and Sarah Jessica says it's a business that she's immensely proud of. You know, it's really amazing to me that asking for what you want is something that you've struggled with. I mean, you're Sarah Jessica Parker. You know, given that this is something that maybe a lot of women struggle with, could you share sort of any ideas you have on how to do this?
Well, I'm always loath to give advice because I feel I'm sensitive to the fact that I have access to people. And I want to be clear about that because that's not the case with everybody. You know, I could pick up the phone and call George Malcolmus. That's not the case for everybody. But I like talking about this idea because I think there are ways to be helpful to one another. And the thing I think is most important for women who want to either carve out new career paths, start businesses, work in industry that they're maybe already associated with in different ways, is to find, you know, I've found that people do want to help. People want to be mentors. There's enormous satisfaction in reaching out or bringing somebody in. And I think the hardest part is asking for help. Women particularly, you know, it's just, it feels weak, you know, it feels needy, it feels hat in hand. You feel you don't have time to convey to somebody who you are, what your professional experience is or isn't, and why is it not, and can you identify that and explain it. But I think if you can summon the courage to reach out to somebody, whether you know them or not, you know, via email, almost all email addresses are available online now. You know, small companies, large companies, there's almost always a way with just a little bit of sleuthing to get contact information from people. And I think it's very impressive when people reach out and say, you know, this is an area of interest, this is how I spent my time, this is what I know, this is what I don't know. And what I would love is to know more. And if I could have 15 minutes of your time, or if I could be brought in and just shadow, be a fly on the wall, watch how you conduct meetings, teach me about tech packages. Teach me about production. I want to produce in the United States. You know, what does that mean? I think the hardest part is simply asking for help. The information is all available now on the internet, but you want, what I think is most helpful is being around people who have experience. And whether they are men or women, I have found that the more I can get close to them and listen and learn and be quiet and just absorb as much as possible, the better equipped I am to ask for money or start a conversation. And I think just it's that initial hurdle, in my experience, is always the hardest part.
You know, Sarah Jessica, like a lot of what you touched on there really deals with this idea of having the confidence to ask for what you want. And confidence, you know, as we know, is something that women tend to struggle with, particularly at work. So do you have any advice on how to build confidence?
Well, I think, first of all, it's just years of working, being an experienced professional. I've been a professional person since I was 8 years old. But I'm also a very curious person, and I also really like being around other people. Like, I really like listening and learning. And so I think partially confidence comes from just knowing that you do have something to offer. I think confidence can come and go because there are areas in which I don't know something or a lot. And so it can retreat, you know? But I think that when people believe in something and they're excited about something and they've informed themselves as much as they can, I think that says a lot to other people.
That's so true, you know. And, you know, what do you think some of the reasons are for this? Why do women often not have the confidence to go for what they want?
Sometimes we get caught up in not having the concrete credit or skill on our CV, right? And that therefore that makes us ill-equipped or not ready. But everybody starts somewhere, you know? I mean, we see businesses sprouting all the time from people who had not worked in those industries prior, you know? You just have to summon something that you don't always know you even have. And sometimes it's a conversation with a friend who can really just remind you of what you know and who you are and how much you have to offer. Sometimes it's a conversation with your children who know you best of all, if you're a parent, a working mother. You know, sometimes it's a local business leader. I mean, you can go have conversations with your chamber of commerce. You know, I mean, there's lots of ways of someone reminding you who you are. And some people just naturally come by it. Like, I meet people all the time, and I'm like, wow, they're so confident. You know, like, how did they manage that? Where did that come from? But, you know, I don't know. I think you just, if you want to do something, you have to find a way out of the house. You just have to. And if you don't, you'll kick yourself later for not just giving it a go, you know? And I know that's hard for a lot of people because a lot of people in this country are really struggling financially. They're not in a financial position to start businesses. They're not in a position to sit around all day and daydream about another life, another career. They're working 2 and 3 jobs. They don't have good child care. They're worried about their health insurance. You know, there's a laundry list of really legitimate concerns. That's why I always try to preface these conversations by acknowledging that I'm in a different position and I have the liberty to make choices. To make a choice, period, is such a privilege, right? But I wish I could be in homes with these other women and pull them out.
That's such important advice, particularly, you know, on how to start a business. I know you're really hands-on with the SJP collection, so could you maybe share any other lessons you've learned along the way?
I don't think anyone can be lazy today. I think the customer is really informed. She knows, he knows. They are paying attention. It's all at their fingertips. You have to earn them, you know. You have to create brand loyalty. You have to be in communication with that customer. You have to know what she's thinking. How is she responding to shoes? What more does she need? What didn't we do right? And the more time you spend on the floor putting shoes on people's feet, on your hands and knees, literally putting shoes on women, the more you know about her, the better for the business. And certainly it's better for your partnerships with retail partners because they know you're invested in your brand. They know you're going to support a collection when it's, you know, when it's delivered in June, July, and delivered in February. They know you're going to come by the store at least twice. You know, I do what I call PAs, but they're not really because there's no press. I don't have hair and makeup. I just jump on a subway or jump on a train or I get on a plane and I go work the floor and I do it 6, 8, 10 times a year easily. And today, I think you have to be in touch with your customer. You have to earn the right to be in her home. Those are hard-earned dollars. You know, our shoes aren't $69, but they're made in the same factories as the shoes that are $1,400 and, you know, $1,800. So we know where we are, but we still have to earn it because that's still a lot of money to somebody. So for me, I say, you know, if you're starting a business, be in the store. If you're starting a business, go to the store. Reach out, make sure customer service is the first priority. You know, answer every question on your social media platforms. Answer every question on your Facebook pages. When people have an issue with a shoe or anything else, you get on it. You fix that problem. If something breaks, you replace it. You do it yourself, you eat the cost, and you replace it. And I think that means a lot to a customer.
That's really fantastic advice, I think, you know, in terms of knowing your customer and earning their trust. I just kind of want to move the conversation now to this idea of innovation and creativity and how important that is, particularly, you know, for all jobs, but particularly for your work as a designer. Could you maybe share where you draw inspiration from?
Well, George and I work together. We design together. We deliver 4 collections a year. So we're designing, like, basically, you know, because we split up, you know, pre-fall and fall, we sort of do as one piece. Then we have resort, and then we have spring, summer. So we're designing like 3 times a year. There's a few kind of, you break up design, at least we do. First of all, we just have to pay attention to SKUs, what is selling and what isn't. The things that are selling that we believe in, we always design deeper into that because that's what turns our lights on. You know, that's what pays our bills. Because we're still a small company and we're not taking paychecks. We're putting any, you know, we're putting any money we make right back into the business. So we need to keep making money in order to grow. So we design into success. That's number one. We also have tried to create something, and this is something I've learned, and it's been really good. We've started creating what we call evergreens. So we'll see, you know, after a year, what's really selling, what's consistently people reaching, what are they reaching for, what are they coming back for. And we've created evergreens. So we have certain styles, silhouettes, colors, fabrications, leathers, etc., that can never be marked down. So that is very important. That's good for our partners. That encourages them to buy into collections because they don't worry about what are we going to do with, you know, what's left. So that's an important part. We also are inspired by women on the street. You know, I'll be walking around, I'll see somebody on a subway. I look at, you know, George and I look at old magazines all the time, especially from Italy in the 60s and the 70s. What were women wearing? We think back about, you know, shoes that I've worn in the past. You know, how are those commercial shoes now? What's interesting about them? What would make them distinguish in the marketplace? We're, you know, our big call out, of course, is color is a neutral. So we're always looking to invest in and design into color more. So all of those kind of go into the conversation. And at this point, we don't talk about it as much because we know we can do it without a lot of conversation. But also, there are the shoes that are the sort of outliers that maybe didn't do well, and we believe in them still. And we'll take a couple of those a season, and we'll say, you know, well, we know this didn't do well, but we love it. Or shoes that just didn't get bought in market that we really believe in, and we put it back out there for the next collection. And we maybe change color, fabrication, satins. But we always have a couple of shoes, a collection, that we really encourage our buyers because we're excited about them.
You know, I have to confess, I'm actually in love with your shoes.
Oh, good.
They're beautifully designed.
Thank you.
You know, and with that, I think there is one last question that a lot of women are dying to know. You've always loved shoes. So what is your favorite pair?
I have always loved shoes. I mean, not in the same sort of fevered way that wonderful woman I played for many years did. You know, I don't spend all my money on shoes, and I'm not willing to sacrifice, like, shelter for shoes. but I do. I think I've grown also to love them more just because I spent so many years in so many different pairs, and I saw construction. I was wearing shoes from, you know, the 1700s. I'd wear shoes straight off a runway in Paris. I'd wear an old broken-down pair from the 70s. So you really get, you grow appreciation for production and for what went into it and the design and the inspiration. And in terms of a favorite pair, I never pick a favorite. Could never. Not capable.
My takeaways from the interview with Sarah Jessica are really that no matter who you are or where you're at on your journey to achieving your goals, from time to time you're going to come up against challenges or you're going to struggle with confidence. And when you do, you really need to draw on your friends and family to remind you of who you are. But the most important part of all of this is to not let these challenges prevent you from getting started or asking for help. We all have something to offer, but going for what you want really starts with leaving the house, as Sarah Jessica says. Again, this is your host, Michelle King. Thanks so much for joining us. And on our next episode, I'll be speaking with Jeannie Mai, the host of the daytime talk show The Real. Jeannie will be discussing her work fighting human trafficking and supporting victims, mostly who are women and children, on their road to recovery. So thanks everyone, and catch you guys again next week.
From The Human Group, She Innovates is a podcast created with support from SAP NextGen, an innovation platform that enables everyone, from individuals, companies, partners, and universities to connect and innovate with purpose. In doing so, SAP NextGen supports the achievement of the Sustainable Development Goals.